Coffee with Cudmore.
Light 104.7 and 1570 AM. WVTL.
Word is getting out that from time to time we enjoy talking with local authors. In fact, yesterday I used the phrase Amsterdam Renaissance. It seems like we're becoming a place where people who write a lot come from or came from. An Amsterdam expat is on the line right now. Somebody doesn't live here now, but he lives nearby. His name is Rick Pep, as in Pep's Restaurant, well-known restaurant in the west end of Amsterdam. But Rick Pep didn't go into the restaurant business. You became a teacher. And I was reading Dan Weaver's article about you on his online paper, Mohawk Valley Independent. And it sounds like you're almost kind of mystified as to why you considered that profession.
Well, that's true. I was a 10th grader, 14 years old, and not really too concerned about where the future might lead me, as most people are not at that point. And it just occurred to me out of the blue, I call it an epiphany moment, if you like, when it seemed very plausible to me that I could enjoy a life spent in the classroom, because I was enjoying it up to that point on the other side of the big desk, you know. So I thought, well, I can do this. I enjoy it. I'm fairly good at it. Perhaps I can earn a living here and do a little good in the world while I'm here. And I believe that worked out to everyone's advantage. I had a great time doing it and have been at it for a long time.
In fact, Dan kind of develops this theme where you said you want to do a little good in the world. I don't know if it was Dan Moore doing this or you indicated it to him, that you attribute that to your Catholic education, both with the sisters who taught you in Amsterdam and the friars over to Siena College.
That's right. I believe that does have a lot to do with it in both cases. The nuns were great. You know, they're portrayed a lot of times in TV shows and whatnot as, you know, obtuse and, you know, heavy-handed and kind of emphasizing discipline above everything else. I did not find that to be the case at all. They were, at least in my experience, gentle and caring, sometimes even brilliant teachers who really, it seemed to me, were doing it just for the love of the work and as part of their vocation, certainly. And certainly there was not much to be had in the way of compensation for them, so there must have been some satisfaction in doing the task itself, and that intrigued me. And then when I went to Siena, of course, there was a lot of stress on what they call the Franciscan tradition over there. And the same thing is what I encountered, really, this time from professors and, of course, lay people. The classroom just seemed to be a good fit. It was an opportunity to work in a type of service profession and yet earn a decent living in the bargain. So I thought it was a nice mix of those two elements to be helpful and at the same time earn a living and support a family. So it proved to be the case.
So you grew up in Amsterdam. You work some at the family restaurant, Pep's, but you go to you go to Siena College. You come out. You get a job teaching at Chalmont, I believe it is, the Chalmont school system.
That's right.
And you stayed there for how long?
37 years. And did a lot more than just teaching, of course. There was a lot of coaching, class advisor, club advisor, DJ, scorekeeper, clock operator, chaperone, my goodness, football game announcer. I was the go-to guy for a lot of that stuff, all the way through, right to the end. And it really enriched the experience for me. It was a joy to be able to do those things. And it also, I think, paid dividends in the classroom because, you know, that teacher-student relationship is very big. It really, you know, leads to positive outcomes in learning and behavior when your kids see you involved to that extent. So I first got into doing this kind of stuff because I enjoyed it and it was fun, you know, and it kept being fun throughout. I used to joke and say, you know, they keep sending me nice kids, so I think I'll stay a while longer. And in fact, I did stay for 4 years beyond the point when I was entitled to retire.
Wow.
I enjoyed it that much.
And in fact, you had perfect attendance as a teacher, did you not?
Well, yes. Let me clarify, though. It is true that I had never taken a sick day. Now, the other, you know, there were times when you go to conferences, certainly, and I did take some days off, some personal days. Of course, when my children were born, and when my grandfather Pep passed away. But actually, it's true. I never did call in sick. So a lot of times, I think it's true, and teachers will tell you, if you're not wildly infectious or contagious, it's easier to just go in and fight your way through it, because that's what a pro does. You know, you go to work and do your job even when you don't feel like doing it, because a lot of times the damage control, let's call it, that you have to do when you do come back to the classroom sometimes isn't worth the effort. So you just go on in, and it's probably true and safe to say that if you're working at half or three quarters of your top speed, as it were, you're probably still doing a better job than a sub who comes in who is not trained in your particular content area. So I always looked at it as it's my obligation. You know, they allow you a certain number of days by contract to be absent, and they pay you for them. So it seems to me it's like stealing if you don't go to work when it is possible to do so.
Wow.
So I could not do that. Yeah. Plus, I watched my father and my mom when she was working. She was mostly a stay-at-home mom, but when she did go to work, they didn't take time off. That's what you do. You get up and you go to work. So it's just the way I was raised.
And when you left Chalmont, they gave you an honorary degree?
That's correct. That's correct. I'm proud to say, hopefully without sounding boastful, that it's the first honorary degree, and so far the only one, in the school history. And it was quite a surprise. It was done at a board meeting, and it was a nice way for them to recognize my heavy involvement in the life of the school for all those years. Very proud of that.
Amsterdam native Rick Pep with us, author of the book Thank You for My Children. Let's talk about the book. The book stemmed from a journal you kept in your last year of teaching?
That's right, at my wife's suggestion. She said, there are going to be a lot of final things that you encounter, and you might want to make note of them for future reference and look back on it to recapture the moment. So I did do that, and it was just for my own enjoyment and my family as well. And then I gave it to a couple of different people. My current principal, I am working in retirement part-time at the HFM BOCES up there next to the community college on Route 67. My principal suggested that I might flesh it out with some anecdotes from different points along the way, different experiences I'd had over those 37 years. So I did that. And then I turned the new version over to another Amsterdam fellow and writer and good friend, Jim Labatt, who read it and gave me additional suggestions as to how I might make it even more useful to potential teachers who might enter the field, and to inspire and maybe guide them a little bit into how to make the most of the career. So it is a composite of all three of those things.
And it's published, or it's out now, as I think Jim does. You have published it with the Troy Books Bookmakers?
That's correct. It's self-published. Very good. And right now, I know there are copies in the Bookhound downtown and at the Peddler's Wagon on Upper Church Street. I expect soon to find it in the Open Door Bookstore at on J Street in Schenectady, and it's also available online from the publisher.
Okay. What is the... I didn't really know, and you explained it to me already, so I've heard this answer, I think, but why do you call it a Thank You for My Children?
Well, it's a threefold title, really. I am thankful for the you know, 4,500 or so students who came through my classroom or played on my teams over the course of 37 years. So in a sense, they are my children. I am thankful for my own biological children, my son Dan, my daughter Christina, who themselves are teachers, because I met their mom, my wife Elisa, at Chalmont when she joined the staff in 1979. And so without that connection between us as employees, those children wouldn't have been born. So I'm very grateful for that. And also it's a reference to a line in the book To Kill a Mockingbird, my favorite piece of literature to teach all those years. At the end of the story, the hero, Atticus Finch, thanks a neighbor for having saved his children's lives from a potential murderer, and he tells him, "Thank you for my children." And that's, it refers to that not only because it's my favorite book, but because I knew it would be an, kind of an inside reference that everybody who teaches English at that level would instantly get.
Rick Pepp is with us. His book, Thank You for My Children, but it also has the following subtitle, High School Teacher's Final Year Journal, Anecdotes and Observations. Rick with us on the morning show. If you have a question for him, you could call 684-0123. I do know the teachers are in school, so maybe that won't happen, but we'd welcome a call if you want to talk to Amsterdam native Rick Pepp about his life and his book on the morning show.
The new Light 104.7 and 1570 AM, WVTL.
Let me ask you about teaching. You taught English.
Right.
I think I've admirably kept my negativity in check here. I've taught, you know, on and off. And it's funny, I had such a different approach to it than you. It's probably why it didn't work out so well for me. I mean, I always saw teaching as something I do kind of like if I have to. And I have done it, you know, over the years. And maybe because of that, I've never really enjoyed it that much. But talking to other teachers, I frequently hear them moan and groan and complain about how bad things have gotten over the years. Do you think that's true or no?
A lot depends on, you know, the attitude of the teacher. I do notice changes in the student population, but these things can be dealt with, and, you know, it depends. If you let, like any other job, I think, if you let these things get to you and sour you, well, of course, they will. I have always had a positive outlook as regards the student body and the administration, actually, which I know some people do not. I was treated well. I was validated in many ways by the students. So I had a really great time myself. But if I had to suggest one thing that I've noticed over the years that's changed significantly is I find it was harder for me as I went along to deal with student apathy. I don't think they got more difficult. I don't think they got less capable. I think that it was has become more difficult to motivate and inspire because there is so much else going on that distracts them from what we're trying to do. It was not uncommon for me to give an assignment to 25 kids in a classroom, something reasonable, a chapter to read perhaps, and come back to find the next day that perhaps three or four had actually done the reading. And you have to roll with that. You have to deal with it. You have to make something out of nothing sometimes when you're not getting a lot of feedback because the assignment was not completed. It does happen. It happened to me. It happens everywhere. So I think that a teacher really needs to work at their presentation skills. Things aren't like they used to be in that sense. You have to be a bit more of an entertainer. This I learned right away, though, from my first principal, George Corrigan, also an Amsterdam fella. who hired me in 1972, and also my wife in 1979, or my wife-to-be.
Excuse me, she also a teacher? You said she worked in the schools. Okay.
She's at Chalmont, currently in the middle school.
She's still there teaching. Okay.
She is. Yeah. A little bit younger and still fighting the good fight. But Mr. Corrigan said to me, you know, this is not going to be like St. Mary's, Rick, because we had both gone to school there. He said, you're going to have to work a little harder. You know, the kids are nice kids. They're not going to be maybe as eager to learn. Some of them won't even be willing. So you have to perform your subject. You have to entertain and basically put on a show whenever it's called for to capture their attention. And it was good advice, certainly. I figured out right away that this guy knew what he was talking about. Certainly had been that kind of teacher himself years before as a chemistry teacher, and highly regarded by his students. So it seemed good enough advice for me, and that's what I tried to do. So I was able, for the most part, to deal with the apathy that I encountered, but it did become a bit of a struggle toward the end.
Oh, yeah. Well, no, I think you're exactly right. I think that's the thing that's the most annoying when I teach typically at the College of St. Rose, or have, and I keep saying that I'm done with it. I think I am done with it now, although my last set of classes were among the best I've had in recent years, but they were very apathetic. I mean, it almost kind of like mystified me. I mean, they wouldn't admit to be interested in anything. You know, sports, media, television, you know, whatever, nothing
exactly,
nothing interesting.
Right.
But if you kept at it, you know. Now, did you lose your temper? I did, or I have, over the years.
Very, very rarely. I at my retirement party, one of the former students who came to speak said that, you know, she never heard me raise my voice in anger. Now, that was very early on, and I'm happy to say that it did not change over the course of the career. I thought too much of it. It's not a job, really. It's a career. I like to go even farther and say it's a calling. It's obviously not for everybody, but you have to honor it. You know, it's a job that if you love it, it will love you back. So if you want to continue to feed off of it and give it your best in return, then you need to find a way to get past the frustrating moments where you might be tempted to lose it you know, say something you'd later regret.
Sure.
So I rarely, if ever, did that. I used to say near the end of my career, we'll get along very nicely if you just listen to what I have to tell you and follow my rules. I said, I haven't sent a kid to the office since the 1970s. And this was in the year 2008, 2009, and that was the truth.
Yep.
I dealt with whatever issues might have arisen myself. That was another piece of advice from Mr. Corrigan. The office doesn't want to clean up after you, as it were, you know, your mistakes that you make with students. You'll be more highly respected if you deal with them yourself. And through, you know, personality, through, you know, gentle but firm discipline, you know, you can have the iron fist, I suppose, as long as you keep it in the velvet glove, you know.
Mm-hmm.
If you discipline with a grin and a twinkle in your eye, it works a lot better than if you come across as Napoleon. So between cajolery and willingness to forgive and start each new day fresh, I really avoided all those kinds of problems.
Well, that's good. I usually have a meltdown a semester, at least. Thank You for My Children, the title of the book by Rick Pepp. And maybe more to the point, you know, since I just do this part-time, I've talked to several teachers who have retired who said that's why they retired, because they were afraid they would do something in class that they would regret.
That was not my motivation at all. The even keel that I learned to maintain, I saw no problem with that or didn't fear that it would be compromised. In my case, it was more a matter of having the, what I would call a lack of academic freedom. I don't know that that's an appropriate way to describe it. I felt toward the end that we on the staff were being micromanaged, you know, not by our administrators. Certainly they were the messengers. We don't want to shoot them. But, you know, from state ed and things of this nature, there would always be directives, accountability increases, hoops to jump through, you know, things to take care of, clean up, bureaucratic, you know, things of this nature that kind of got in the way of your classroom.
You mean that the movement toward this more testing and so forth? I mean, there's the quote-unquote standards that they've imposed?
Yes. That is exactly it. We, you know, all the teachers that you talk to will, or many of them anyway, will tell you about teaching to the test and for fear that they will be evaluated and found wanting because the kids aren't achieving at a certain level.
Right.
You know, in the old days, as I call them, it wasn't that long ago, you know, there were more opportunities for a teacher to try to create wonder in the students, you know, to get them excited about learning instead of trying to cram a bunch of, you know, formulaic stuff into their heads so that they might score well on a test and, you know, get the school a higher rating in the Capital District Business Review, for example, you know. That seems to be a lot more what it's about than when I started. So I felt that every year there were more and more hoops to jump through, and every year that went by, I felt less and less inclined to jump through them. So Ben and Jerry, I visited the Ben and Jerry's plant in Vermont one time, and I got a great T-shirt there that said on the front, "If it's not fun, why do it?"
Yeah.
And I thought to myself, you know, I think I've hit that that spot in my career. Now, again, I have to clarify, my administration treated me very well. My faculty friends, I miss terribly. The students were always good to me. I just didn't care for the regulations coming down from people who really had spent very little, if any, time in a classroom. And we're calling the shots somehow for reasons and to achieve goals that really had nothing to do with why I signed up for this profession in the first place.
Right. They probably had a political and or public relations agenda, you know, so much.
No doubt. No doubt.
But,
so, that wasn't for me. Yeah. So it was time.
Well, Rick Papp, it's certainly been a pleasure talking with you. Best of luck with the book. I know you. I don't know. Who am I to give you advice? But you got to do some book signings. You know, you're going to do one that
I've heard that. Yes,
the library would do it here, the Amsterdam Library, and they would do it down at Open Door, and Bookhound would do it, and Pepper's Wagon would do it. But anyway, the book is $14.95. It's available. He told us at Bookhound, 16 East Main Street, the same place you can buy my books, and that's the Bookhound, East Main Street, Old Peddler's Wagon on Church Street in Amsterdam. And did you say you have a website for it?
I do not, but the publisher does, www.thetroybookmakers.com.
Right.
And they have an online catalog there where it's you can find it.
TroyBookmakers.com. Well, I thank you, Rick Papp, for joining us, and hope to see you out and about in Amsterdam. And I think the book is probably a great addition to anybody's library, especially for somebody who's been a parent or is going to be a teacher or is a teacher. I think they'd enjoy it.
I hope so.
All right, take care.
Thank you, Bob.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.